to First Things First. Chris Bosh played 13 NBA seasons, was an all-star in 11 of them, also won two titles in 2012 and 2013 with the Miami Heat. But just as impressive as all of that, he's here with us early this morning chatting. Thank you so much for being with us, sir. Chris, love having you here.
Absolutely.
All right, how's retirement going? You just told us about this amazing vacation you just came off of. How are things going?
It's going good. I was just saying summers used to be a lot, you know, more fun because I got to do all the crazy stuff and be a kid. I have five children.
Oh, yeah, you're no longer the kid.
Yeah, I'm no longer the kid, and now school started back, so I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's your school year, their school year is your summer now.
Absolutely.
So, all right, so during the summer, while you were wrangling your kids, it was one of the craziest summers, really the craziest summer since the summer you, LeBron, and Wade came together, but that was really one instance. This was the whole league changed in the span of about 96 hours. What was your opinion of it? What was your reaction to it, watching it from afar?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a slippery slope sometimes because a lot of fans get upset. A lot of fans get happy and a lot of fans get upset at the same time. But I liked the league kind of rebalancing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that was really exciting. I mean, the Warriors had their run and they're probably still going to be successful after Klay comes back. But just reshuffling is nothing. It's nothing wrong with that. And I liked how it reshuffled a little bit. The East lost more All-Stars, as usual. But, you know, I think it's still in a very good, you know, interesting place, and it'll be very competitive next year.
It should be very competitive. One of your good friends, LeBron James, and the Lakers, a lot of hype about them. They've already suffered a significant injuries, already losing Boogie for the season. What would your expectations be with, because, you know, it's difficult to play with LeBron. You got to make a lot of adjustments. They added Dwight Howard. What would your expectations of the Lakers and with this re-energized Dwight Howard?
Well, I think it's a championship or bust situation. I think everybody knows
okay.
that. If you want to be a part of the Lakers, it's all about championships. You know, you go and play in the Staples Center or go to their practice facility, you're going to see all the greats up there and all those banners looking down on you. And so that's what it's about. And they have a very strong team. I think on paper they have the strongest team. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they have to put it together. But, you know, it's not difficult playing with LeBron. It's just you have to, you know, you have to change your game.
But you're only playing 82 games. It's not only playing with LeBron. It's the rest of that stuff.
Absolutely. It's a team sport, obviously, right? And, you know, it's a lot of dynamics that you have to get used to playing with them. But at the same time, it's better than not playing with them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's a great player. So you want to play with great players. You want to have great teammates and be in those kind of situations.
He's a great player. Is he the greatest player in the league right now? Is LeBron still the best player in the league?
I mean, well, that's always such a relative argument. Yes, but then you have to give it to Kawhi right now because he was on, you know, the best team, was the finals MVP.
Sure.
So I would give respect to Kawhi, but at the same time, You know, Bron coming off of a nice stretch of off time for the first time in years, I think he's going to be rejuvenated, probably get a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And attack this season like he's supposed to.
This is now, we had the era of big threes. We even briefly in Golden State appeared to have a big four. Mm-hmm. And now it seems to be back to duos. The injured guys, let's make them healthy for a moment. So you have KD, Kyrie, Steph, Clay, Russ, Harden, Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron, Anthony Davis. Is there one of those five that stands out to you as the best duo right now in the league?
I think Kyrie and
KD.
KD, that's an interesting dynamic because KD can play one through five, guard run through five. I think they have a very interesting dynamic that they can kind of exploit when they get healthy. Paul, PG, and Kawhi, I mean, that's a lot of arms.
A lot of
length on that front, mm-hmm. In the front court a little bit. And I think they'll be able to kind of really exploit that. They should have a very good defensive team this year. But, I mean, you know, I don't know who's going to be the best. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I mean, I'm the type of person that you just have to play the game. It's a lot of hype, and everybody mm-hmm. looks good, and that's great. You want eyeballs on you. Mm-hmm. But then when it's time to toss the ball up,
But that's what you said you love about the league right now, that you don't know who the best is because there's parity for the first time in a long time because of all the reshuffling.
Absolutely.
And that's what you said you're most looking forward to. I'm also curious, which move, though, surprised you the most? I know you said you really like all the different moves. Were you surprised that Kawhi went to the Clippers? Were you surprised KD ended up coming here to Brooklyn? What to you said, whoa, I didn't expect that?
Kawhi and KD.
You thought they'd pair up. You didn't know where.
Well, I didn't know. You know, I think everybody kind of speculated Kawhi was thinking of one of the L.A. teams. I think that was always heavy in the speculation.
Right.
But at the same time, the way, you know, Paul going there and then Kawhi going there, it changed the dynamic tremendously in the West.
Right.
You know, Oklahoma City, they're back in a rebuilding situation a little bit. And Paul gets to the Clippers and now they have a championship caliber team right off the bat. I think that was the moves that surprised me the most. And then Russ going to Houston, them being able to pull off
that
trade.
Do you think that works, those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when people say, oh, man, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Look, two MVPs, I'm going to take it and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah, but you're one of those kind of guys, though, that I can play with anyone. You can adapt. You can play in the post. You saw with LeBron, man, you went out on the court. Man, developed that three-pointer, that nice one from the corner. I want to go back to Kawhi's situation because very few people have the experience of knowing about the people up north in Canada and the type of hospitality. Imagine how tough, because I talk to people. I know Kawhi, know his people. Take us through how tough it was for him to win that championship the way he won it and leave there, even though he was going back home because of the pull of Canada on him now that they were champions.
Well, I mean, I couldn't imagine winning a championship in Toronto because how they treat me and we didn't win anything.
Right.
You know, we didn't win nothing and they still very
It would have been impossible for you to leave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the ownership there, the management, Tannenbaum, Larry Tannenbaum is a great owner of the team. He's always visible. You can always talk to him. You can knock on his door at any time. They've always kind of had that open door policy. So that trickling down and then Masai being the GM, they built a great culture there. And for them to capitalize and win a championship was amazing. But yeah, to leave is not easy at all because, I mean, I know you saw the parade.
Yes.
I mean, just the people and the love that that place gives out. I mean, even if you make a business decision later to do whatever you want to do, they're going to make it hard on you. But, you know, I always tell people, you know, Toronto was a great start for me. You know, some of the best fans in the world.
2003 draft class, the greatest top five of a draft class in NBA history, the number two pick notwithstanding. That LeBron is obviously still playing at a super high level. You were playing at a very high level, an all-star level, until blood clots obviously derailed what you were doing. D-Wade just finally stepped aside after playing well for Miami last year and having some moments late in the season. Melo hasn't stepped aside. He's being pushed aside to a degree. You know, Melo, you played in the league his entirety, almost the entirety of his career. Why do you think he's not in the league, and do you think he could help a good team?
Yes, he could help a good team. He's a pretty good basketball player. I don't know. I can't understand why he doesn't have a job. Maybe people are still trying to figure out what they want to do with their teams, what kind of, if any, veteran presence, if they want a veteran presence, those slots they need to fill, and if he can fill them. You know, I think it's crazy that he's not playing. I mean, I've been knowing Melo since we were both 17 years old, and, you know, just kind of seeing those things starting to happen, it always does, right? But I think he should be playing. I mean, he's good enough. He's in shape. He can shoot it. I don't know if they watch much basketball, but he can play, you know, and I think he can really, really help a team if, you know, they bring him in.
You've been you've been retired. You've had a second to kind of look back and think about your games and your days. Who's the best player you ever played against?
Tim Duncan.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because he was my hero growing up, and then I had to play in the finals against him twice. You know, being in San Antonio, I'm from Dallas, being able to see Tim, you know, play right up close and how great he was, and that was kind of the evolution of the four man, you know, so.
Real quick on that, you mentioned playing in the finals against him twice. Ray Allen, I think he's told us, has a framed picture, not shockingly, of one of the biggest shots in NBA history in his house. Mm-hmm. You've got a couple of really nice houses. Do you have anywhere in there a framed picture of the rebound? Maybe the biggest rebound in NBA history?
I don't.
How does that not happen?
I put up all my memorabilia in storage, actually.
But do you, okay, so you have it in storage, but yeah. Do you have anything commemorating that moment? The rebound that led to the Ray Allen shot?
I need
the forgotten
to.
Rebound.
I should get it, man. I don't. I'm thinking like, yeah, I don't. You know, I need some new posters, too, so.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, I need to.
Every time I see you on TV, it's not lost on me what you went through. But I think about you as a person. You've played at a high level. High school, amazing player. Short college career, amazing player. High draft pick by the Raptors. What do you think about when you watch NBA games now?
It's fast. Really fast. You know, the game has changed. It's evolved quite a bit. I think the three ball was really, really prevalent in the last 2 years. I think that'll tone down just a little bit. But you know, just the speed of the game, the skills of the player. Now it's encouraged for big men to shoot, for big men to handle the ball. Before, you know, you get the coach standing up on the sideline. Yeah.
No.
You know, it's just that's how it always happened.
Right.
But you know, now I mean, it's been waiting for a long time for the game to evolve like that. Now it's accepted, and I like seeing the young guys play. I mean, going out there, playing as fast as they do, and then it being so competitive, especially next year. I love NBA basketball.
You mentioned you're from Texas. You were a Cowboys fan growing up, correct?
Yes.
Still a Cowboys fan.
Still a Cowboys fan, yeah.
All right, Zeke's in the fold. Yeah. Went to the playoffs last year, won a game. What do you think about your Cowboys this year?
I mean, hey, man, feel good. Feel good. You know, it's funny. Everybody, that's always kind of like a thing. You know, it's always a subject of conversation in the fall. Like, man, what? You know, who team
you got?
Do you like?
Yeah.
Cowboys fan.
Well, because people assume you get it. You get a different reaction. It's Cowboys fan. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Maryland. People, you know what I mean? People think
right.
you.
I'm from
but
Dallas.
You're from yes. Dallas, so you got it. You got it authentically. Now you're a little. You're around my age, so you remember the glory days, but you weren't. You were like 9, 10, 11 years old during the glory days. So yeah, that this is the this is potentially the best era of Cowboys football of your adult life that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. How much you like Dak? How much you like their team?
I mean, they're a great team. I've had a chance to meet some of the guys, and I went to training camp a couple years back. I mean, it's a great core of guys. Jason Witten coming back this year, given that veteran presence in the locker room, I think that's really important. But, I mean, that's what it comes down to. We all know that they're going to get covered. It's going to be a big deal. You know, Zeke, he has his contract now. Now it's time to perform. Dak, I think he knew his situation coming in. Like, all right, cool, we've got these contracts. I'm going to come in and be, you know, the number one in quarterback and do my job. And if he does his job, you know, he will get rewarded. But even after that, you know what it is. You have to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's just, you know, that's the bottom line.
Standard in Dallas.
Yeah.
All right, did you catch the video of Pat Riley and Dwayne Reed doing a little Aladdin-themed partying on the boat?
I didn't. I heard about it.
Oh, well, why don't we show you, and then you can pretty much let us
this
know
is unbelievable.
If you
this
would
is
ever
your,
have
what?
Been a part of
oh,
this.
Yeah, so, yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, boy.
You didn't know that was Pat.
I didn't know that was Pat. That's Pat?
Yeah.
I did not know that was,
there was
Pat.
There's a little, like, Greg Popovich.
I thought that was another dude, man. I didn't know that was Pat.
Right.
What?
I didn't think it was
Whose
him either.
Whose beard is that?
That's his beard.
That is not what he bought it. His beard.
They're doing
he
Pat
it.
Riley's beard like Nick Wright's hair.
Oh my God! I saw Chris a couple years ago when he walked in studio. Right. He says to me, "He's like, man, when I saw you 2 years ago, weren't you bald?" I'm like, "Man, I shaved my head. You can grow hair, boy."
Oh, yeah, they should have. They probably should have worked on that move a little bit. I like the two-step, but you know, they probably should have got a.
Yeah, Gabrielle Union maybe teach D Wade a few more dance moves.
I actually posted that video. I didn't know that was Pat.
Really?
Chris, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Know. It's time to celebrate. Football is finally back. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, has huge Week 1 contests. The first one starts this Thursday night when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season in a single-game showdown with $2.5 million in total prizes up for grabs. Draft your single-game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using code FTF will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Get in on the season opener action. Download the DraftKings app now and use code FTF. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. And new users, don't miss this extra special Week 1 bonus. Enter our code FTF to get a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. That's code FTF only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Some breaking news to report, the much-anticipated breaking news. According to Ian Rappaport, Ezekiel Elliott has agreed to a six-year, $90 million extension. He now becomes the highest-paid running back in the NFL, with about half of his deal guaranteed. All right, CC, we all expected this to happen when Ezekiel Elliott got on that flight back from Cabo yesterday, landing in Dallas. What is your reaction to the deal he now received?
Happy for him. Happy they're able to get their season underway with the full complement of players. He deserved that deal. I think he went about the right way, kept his mouth quiet. Went to Cabo. Even if I would have decided to do something different, I believe that at the end result, he stayed there. You're not going to have sound bites of him. He wasn't out places eating. He wasn't out places hanging out. And I believe that Jerry and the Cowboys organization, they respected that because he wasn't throwing that back in their face. But given the three seasons that he's played, the way he's run the ball, the way this organization is dependent upon his ability to be able to run it between the tackles for 20 to 25 carries, his overall durability, him as a blocker, pass protection pickup, hands out of the backfield, he's a complete running back. He has lived up to every expectations. When you have those kids on the draft board, you see them, okay, well, this is what they did in college. What's their potential if I get them to the league? And people forget, when they drafted him, running backs were on their way out in the NFL. Is a superstar worth it? Is a high draft pick worth it? Dallas said, yes. If you happen to get one that's special, he is worth it. That's what the Rams had done the previous seasons in getting Todd Gurley, and it continues the precedent. That's why the Jets went out and got L. Bell. That's why the Giants have Barkley. That's why the Carolina, they have McCaffrey there. Like, they're still a contingent in the NFL that believes, man, if you got a stud and he runs the ball, it's okay for him to be a high draft pick and for you to be able to pay him a lot of money. Also, I believe that there's an obligation positional-wise that the guy who is the best and has the most leverage, he needs to leverage that not only for himself, but for the other running backs that come after him. They've done that for years in the league, and it's a matter of point. Michael Thomas did the same thing in New Orleans. Is he the best receiver in the league? Don't matter. It's my turn right now, and I'm getting ready to make this thing tick to $20 million. That's what he did. Next guy is going to get $21 million. Zeke's able to do the same thing, getting $15 million a year.
And Zeke got everything he wanted. And he's, according to Todd Archer just moments ago, he's going to be at practice today. So he's going to be able to play Week 1. Chris had said this thing, you got to be at the Wednesday practice. You said that a week ago. He's going to be at the Wednesday practice.
That's when the game plan goes in for Sunday.
Deadlines create deals. The Cowboys clearly had an artificial deadline in their head, which was, man, we're going to have the game plan installed. We're going to have our first full day of practice like a regular NFL week this Wednesday. Need Zeke here. And Zeke gets more money pardon me, more money per year than Todd Gurley, $15 million per year. Way more money guaranteed, if Rappaport's correct, at around $45 million guaranteed, when Gurley's guaranteed at signing was $22 million. Now, people will look at the $90 million. Those last couple years on the deal are essentially going to be team options. So that doesn't really, that's not relevant to this so much. But he got everything he wanted. He reset the running back marketplace. And Chris's point on what this means for the other backs, yeah, man, Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, they needed a deal like this. So it wasn't just, oh, the one guy who got paid before his rookie deal was Todd Gurley, and then a year into the contract, he's got an arthritic knee. That would have been a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
And by the way, those guys are pretty damn invested, too, in Zeke actually being really good again.
Of course.
Because you don't want it to be Gurley got paid, and then his knee flares up. Zeke gets paid. He's not the same guy. Not that I would anticipate that happening. But I understand where the NFL is on running backs. I understand the belief that a guy like Melvin Gordon, even a first-round pick, averages around 1,000 yards per season, that a guy like that can be thought of as replaceable. But the very best in the league, the top four or five guys to me, are still highly valuable, and you're seeing them being compensated as such.
So what impact, then, did all of this, if any, have on the Dallas Cowboys, the holdout, the wanting to get paid, wanting to be the highest-paid player 2 years before your deal was up? What impact did it have on the Cowboys?
It's going to cost them a couple young players. It's going to cost them guys they want to keep on this team, guys that if you're trying to compete for Super Bowl, you need talented players. But the pie, it got a lot smaller. Reportedly, before he started signing these extensions, Dallas had $25 million remaining this year, reported $75 million next year. So Jerry's got the money. But ultimately, the money, every slice of the pie you give up. So eventually, will they be able to sign some of their other defensive free agents? And it's some guys on that offensive line in the next year or two, they're going to have to take a pay cut. Jerry going to come to them and be like, listen, buddy, Tyron Smith, let me talk to you, all right? That right now what you're making, I don't consider you to be the premier left tackle. I need an adjustment. So Travis Frederick got injured last year, missed all of last season. Am I going to continue to pay him? Like, it's on the board if he doesn't get back to the level. So that's what happens. You lose younger players, and then there's some other veteran players going to have to take a haircut, or they're going to have to leave the Dallas Cowboys.
Is Dak Prescott going to be one of those players? How does this contract affect Dak?
Well, I think I said it yesterday, and Chris has been echoing it for quite some time. It would be shocking if Dak takes the field on Sunday without a new deal. No matter what the Cowboys' last best offer is to Dak before they close negotiations before the start of the regular season, to me, it would be almost agent malpractice to not recommend you have to take it. We've gotten this as high as we can because it is such a violent game. Even though they're protecting quarterbacks, there are still devastating injuries. We saw what happened to Alex Smith,
right.
And Dak's never gotten any real money. If Jared Goff just got $110 million guaranteed, even if the offer to Dak is $80 million guaranteed, and even if the Jared Goff just set the market at $33.5 million, or at least not set the market, but he got $33.5
million, right.
Even if the offer to Dak is more like Carson Wentz's, not close to $40, it would be such a gamble for him as a human being to not take that money before he goes and plays another game. I think this probably doesn't actually impact Dak's money that much because let's say they had carved out for Zeke $12.5 million, and now it's $15 million. I don't think that $2.5 million is going to come out of Dak's slice of the pie.
Yeah.
I think that $2.5 million is maybe going to come out of what they have for Byron Jones this offseason, what they have for, you were mentioning, a veteran offensive lineman if they ask him to take a pay cut. Dak's going to get paid, and it would be shocking to me if he does not get paid before the start of the season because of the risk he would be assuming by not signing the contract before the start of the season.
All right, that's what it means for Dak financially, but what about on the field? How does signing and getting Ezekiel Elliott back in there, what does that do for Dak come Sunday?
Well, it gives their offense. People aren't talking about it, but they got a new offensive coordinator who's never called a play in Kellen Moore. All right. I know Jerry Jones has liked him for a long time, even when he was on the roster briefly there in Dallas. So now he's got an opportunity. They got a new quarterback coach in John Kitten. It gives John Kitten an opportunity to be able to coach Dak with the full complement of Amari Cooper, even though he might be a little injured, a little gimpy, but Ezekiel Elliott. So now putting in a game plan, my quarterback has a chance to be successful. And I believe Dallas is going to surprise the Giants by how many times they throw the ball, how many times they go down the field initially early in the game, especially with play action. Everyone, the Giants are reading it. They know Ezekiel Elliott's just coming back today. You know what I would do? Heavy play action. I fake Zeke into the line of scrimmage. Give me some easy chunks on the outside. So if I'm Dak, regardless of what the offer is, I know Amari is straight for the future. They can put the franchise tag on him, and Amari has pretty much said so. Now they got Zeke. If I'm Dak, I'm going right in there, because Jerry said this a couple weeks ago. There have been competent offers to all parties. So I knew Zeke had an offer of $14 million in front of him. He just didn't like how the money was stacked. So he got it to 15, got the money stacked a little bit different. And there's a contract in front of Dak today. He can sign it if he want to. I believe he's more likely to sign it now that I got number 21, because Dak's a smart guy. He's a good leader, and he realized, I don't want to play any more football in my career without number 21 in the backfield.
And what it means for Dak, what it means for the team, is they are now, to me, a fringe, bottom of the fringe, but a fringe Super Bowl contender. Without Zeke, to me, they were a fringe playoff contender. That's why they couldn't suffer this holdout lasting weeks into the season. That's why, to me, the Giants game became a losable game without Ezekiel Elliott. I know it's the NFL, any game's a losable game, but at this point, I'd be shocked with Zeke in the fold, even if he only touches the ball 15 times, because the defense has to account for him every time he's on the field. Dak has easier throwing lanes every time he's on the field. Amari and Randall Cobb and Jason Witten's job is easier, at least a little bit, every time he's on the field. And as more news trickles in, it's now being reported that the guaranteed money is 50 million dollars. That much more so than Lev got 13 a year, Gurley got 14, Zeke gets 15. The guaranteed money is totally market resetting for the position and the most important figure in any contract.
That number's a little distorted because he got 13 million he's making the next 2 years. So that money's already guaranteed. So if I add that to the guarantees that they have, so you have to kind of...
So $37 million, according to the reports, of new guaranteed money.
There you
which
go.
Which still is Trump's yes. anything that has happened. But you're right. He already had this year's salary and next year's salary locked in.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. With their 53-man roster officially set to play Washington Week 1, we can start nitpicking Philly's talent. On paper, the Eagles might be the most complete team in the NFL. NFL off paper, they might just be as well. Head coach Doug Peterson said, "This is the deepest roster he's ever had." See, are the Eagles set up for another Super Bowl run?
They really are, Jenna. If you look at their overall playoff experience, it's not like that they just built this team through free agency. Most of this team is built organically, either through the draft, developing other players off other teams. So I like the way it's not just a hodgepodge of big personalities and names thrown together. So they got good young players. Anytime you start where Pro Football Focus has you the best offensive line, the best defensive line, and, of course, my favorite group, the wide receivers, the best wide receivers, that's going to be a good football team. So it's not hype. There's more hype in Cleveland. This is a more proven commodity if Carson Wentz is better, which he's got to be, in with that new contract, then yes, this Philadelphia team on paper and on the football field, I believe it's a great collection of talent and potentially could be a Super Bowl champion.
Folks in Philadelphia think I don't like their football team, but that in 2019 could not be further from the truth. And I think that Doug Peterson has the exact right wording here. The deepest roster he's ever had. And I think it might be the deepest roster in the entire NFL. They've got two truly quality tackles that are not in their starting lineup. They've got four legitimate wide receivers. They've got three legitimate running backs. They have not one but two potential high-level tight ends. That's just on the offensive side of the ball. The only spot, oddly enough, that they don't have depth on offense is the quarterback position with Foles leaving. I know they brought in McCown, but that doesn't really matter. They obviously are all in on Carson Wentz not only playing great, but playing a full 16-game season. And defensively, you mentioned that Pro Football Focus has them with the best defensive line in the NFL. That might be true if you're just talking about the starters, and it's certainly true if you're talking about the full rotation of depth. They have seven, potentially eight, depending on what you get from Josh Sweat, high-level defensive linemen on this roster. Fletcher Cox is probably the least talked about great, great player we have in this league. Before his career is over,
I agree with you.
He should win a Defensive Player of the Year at some point. He kind of is unlucky that he's playing in the exact same era as Watt and Donald, two guys who have played interior D-line and just dominated. The only question mark I have, C, and it didn't bite him 2 years ago, it bit him a bit last year, but last year was more about injury, is the back seven of the defense. The linebacking core in the secondary, I don't think has the depth, and I don't think has the elite front-level players. Everywhere else on the team looks as good as it's ever looked in Philadelphia. How much of a hindrance do you think that back seven could be for Philadelphia?
Well, Nick, you're right on, but in the modern salary cap era, we have to get used to having one or two units that are not going to be up to par with the rest of the team. But if you also typically, it's going to be where you spent resources. So if you look at their roster, where they've drafted high, where they have spent resources either with their younger players or with free agency, so that's also the position that has the least amount of dollars. So for me, it's not can they be great. I need their secondary to be around the middle of the pack. But what's more important is can you create turnovers, because turnovers gives that offense extra possessions, and you don't need to be an elite defense if you can do that. And the other thing is big plays down the field. Will they make teams go the distance? 8, 10, 12 play drives? Because if you don't give up big plays over the top, which young secondaries have a tendency to do, so those are the areas that I'm looking at. That's like, they don't have to be great. They don't have a lot of draft capital in that secondary, so can they create turnovers and not give up big plays? It leads to a linebacking core that I believe will be much improved and a defensive front that is the best we'll see.
We don't often talk about general managers, but you should in Howie Rose because he's been able to put together such a deep roster at so many different positions, maybe except the one position you want to see a little depth, that is a quarterback, because you don't know what you're really going to get, hopefully, a whole season with Carson Wentz. But a lot of people are going to want to compare what they have this year to what they had when they won the Super Bowl just a few years ago. There are a lot of same pieces there. Which team do you like better?
Well, Chris, I certainly like this team better than the one that went into the playoffs the year they won the Super Bowl. The quarterback's better. Jason Peters is there. They're not dealing with the litany of injuries that team had that made them true underdogs. Now, will this team be better than the team that you had through the first 14 weeks of the season that got them home field advantage that I think was the most critical piece of them winning the Super Bowl? But I think the way for this team to be better than the Super Bowl team is the guy we're seeing right there, number 11, Carson Wentz. And you said something I think really important, Chris, which is that he got paid this offseason. And obviously that's important for him and his family and security. But on the field, the reason it matters is he's not looking over his shoulder in any way, shape, or form now. Foles is gone. He's locked in.
Yes.
He got the money. There were those articles that came out at the end of last season about him needing to grow as a leader. He seemed to acknowledge those, and even if he thought they were somewhat unfair, acknowledge there are things I need to do. We should see the best version of Carson Wentz we've ever seen, which is saying a lot considering in year two he was on pace to being the MVP of this league.
Yeah, I think you're making valid points as far as him. I think his comfort level will be there. I think that anytime you're a young player and you're unproven and they have someone behind you that either the fans like, was a high draft pick, or something as far as someone like Nick Foles who had the magic carpet ride in that playoff, you do have anxiety. Regardless of how much confidence you think you might have, in those moments when you're by yourself, you're like, man, I wish everyone believed in me like the way they believe in Nick Foles. So I do believe this team would beat that team because of the quarterback. Also, you have to realize their fan base. Jenna, You know a lot about the Philadelphia fan base. It was one of those fan bases that always thought something tragic was going to happen. Now they have their first championship. So for me, it's easy for that fan base to get behind this football team. And Nick, you mentioned it before. If they can get home field advantage, who do you think is going to come into the link, Jenna and Nick, and be able to beat those Philadelphia Eagles? So I think it's a combination of things. I believe the 2019 version, because if you look at the overall experience, not only of the front office and of the head coach, I believe that they're better set for a run than they were 2 years ago when they upset New England with that great Super Bowl win.
And the home field advantage part is so critical, and this is where, since you're not here, you can't snatch the schedule away from me. I can go through it just quickly here.
I can do it if you need me to.
They have two lucky breaks on their schedule. See, one is shared by the entire division, which is the NFC East this year plays the AFC East. So you've got the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets on your schedule. But the other part of their schedule that I think bodes really well for a team to be hot going into the playoffs is their final month of football is Miami, Giants, Washington, Dallas, Giants again. So aside from that home game against Dallas, in that final five games, you should be playing three games against rookie quarterbacks, one game against the Dolphins, who are going to be starting Rosner, Fitzpatrick, and then a home game against the Cowboys. Even if they don't start great, even if they're 6-5, they could reel off five straight, be one of the hottest teams going into the playoffs with those five games to end the year. I think that works incredibly in their favor. If you're a team that thinks, we're just trying to make the playoffs, you want the soft part of your schedule early so you can get off to a good start of the season. If you're a team that's trying to win a championship, having those games late so you can go into the playoffs hot, I think is a huge edge. The schedule, to me, to my eye, fell very favorably for them this year.
And if Dallas is not with Amari Cooper and Zeke is slow going in the first couple games, then they could really take control of the NFC East. See?
Yes. Someone must have fed that schedule thing to you, because typically, NFL players, we don't look at that schedule. We do look at the opposition. But, Nick, you make a great point as far as who are their opposition, how many teams they have rebounding. They're going to get the meat of their schedule early. And if they can get off to a great start, you're talking about having one of those special, special type years. And home field advantage in the NFC, it becomes important because, Nick, you've been talking about it, the NFC is stacked. And Philadelphia, if they can get through those first 2 months of the season, they are set up because of the schedule. Washington is rebuilding. The Giants are doing giant type of things. But that AFC East, the Dolphins, oh, my God, the Dolphins are doing an MBA. They're tanking, and they're trying to lie to us. Buffalo, they will be improved, but they're not going to win more than six games. So it's set up for them. The Jets will be a tough matchup, but it is set up for them to be able to accumulate double digits. And potentially, Nick, if you can get the 13 wins, bro, which is hard to do, man, you can. You talking about a special, special season? Man, grease up those up the poles in Philadelphia because people will be climbing them. Nick, I don't think you should go back to a game, though, there. I think the people might
I think people, because my love for the Sixers, I think people are coming around on me. Silly brotherly love. They're big Nick Wright fans these days.
Let's move on to another NFC East team, the Cowboys. They are complete yet again. Ezekiel Elliott back at practice yesterday. That after signing his very lucrative six-year, $90 million extension, making Zeke the highest paid running back in NFL history. We waited a long time to hear from him, and now that he's signed and delivered, here's what he had to say ahead of Sunday's divisional showdown against the New York Giants.
I was definitely really anxious, you know, because I definitely wanted to be here for the start of the season. But I'm happy it got done when it did, and I'm glad I was able to rejoin my teammates and, you know, start the season with them. Just the biggest thing, you know, during negotiations was, you know, that was important with the Joneses, and was that we're trying to keep this team together, and because we have a good young team. To suit up in front of, you know, these fans, that's what they deserve, and just go out there and, you know, give them a show.
Was it important for you to be the highest paid running back in football?
It was.
Why?
Because I believe I'm the best.
All right, Ezekiel Elliott talking about trying to keep this team together. And for the most part, this is the same team as they finished the season off with last year. Are these Cowboys better than last year's 10-6 team, CeCe?
I think anytime you can keep a team together with the amount of transition with some continuity. So even they have the same players, they got a few coaches that change. And continuity, Coach Mangini, he'll be out here later. It's underrated in the league because continuity creates building blocks that, oh, we finished here from just what we know, information standpoint. Forget how we played on the field, but I can add more information because I know this group of players, they know this, and they handled it last year. If you look at the last eight games of the regular season and the playoff game for Dallas, you would have to think, man, I would like to keep this offense together. Amari Cooper was not there. He missed most of the beginning of the season, and we saw that Dak Prescott, who to me is the most valuable player in that offense, not the best. Zeke's the best player, but he's the most valuable because if he reaches his potential, then they can have Super Bowl aspiration. Because in the league, when teams expect you to be able to throw the football, you have to be able to throw it, and you have to be able to throw it at a level that teams fear. And we didn't see that in Dallas the first 2.5 years that Dak was there. We saw it in those last eight games. We saw that in the playoffs. Yes, this is a dangerous, young football team. They are right. Offensive line is well seasoned. Zeke is ready to carry that load as far as 300 carries, 70 to 80 passes out of the backfield. And Amari Cooper, I believe that we will see only the best in him moving forward. So, yes, they are situated for success, Nick.
When you say you've got to be able to throw the ball when other teams expect you to throw it, I hearken back to what DeMarcus Ware said yesterday. Can't just be a play-action passer. You can't only be able to succeed passing through misdirection or when they don't know what you're going to do. It's got to be 3rd and 9. And the whole world knows I'm throwing the football. Can I do that? And that is the next progression for Dak Prescott. But to directly answer your question, I do think the Cowboys are better than last year. That does not necessarily mean you will have a better record. But they should be better. What was their biggest offseason loss? MC Cole Beasley, like who is their big departure? They get back Travis Frederick. They have all their young core back. They when you have young players like Lyle Collins and Dak, guys that are still on the uptick, you should be better. Now, the offensive coordinator spot, Kellen Moore, is a question mark.
Right. To me, I wouldn't say the biggest loss, the biggest transition or biggest question mark.
Absolutely. And so that is something we'll see, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt in that regard. But the reason that I feel a team that won 10 games last year could be better, and yet I don't think they're going to make the playoffs is, man, that when they won 8 of their last 10, including the playoff game, because they went from 3-5 to win, they won 8 of their next 10 to end the season, every single one of those wins was a one-score game. In that 8-2 stretch, the point differential was +6. Meaning their wins were super close, their losses were not nearly as close. They had the 23-0 loss, they had the loss in the playoff game to the Rams that I think was 8 or 10 points. So I say that to say this, I think the Cowboys are more talented. I think the Eagles, unfortunately, though, are far better equipped than they were last year. And the Cowboys, when you go over the course of the season, it was 8-2 in one-score games, that tends to regress back to the mean a little bit. You don't win all those field goal games that you won last year. So I do think the Cowboys are in better position. I don't know if that means an 11 or 12 win season.
Are we going to see a marked difference in their offense with Kellen Moore there as their offensive coordinator? We don't talk that much about him. He'll be calling plays now. Is that going to be different?
Right. I think it's still going to take some time. I think from an offensive standpoint, they've communicated what they want to do. They want to be a little more motion. They want to create a little more hocus pocus. They're not give the defense 25 seconds to know what formation they're in and kind of predict what they're going to run. So I believe it's going to take some time for that, but it all starts with their passing attack. We know they can run the ball.
Yep.
Their passing attack, I believe their passing attack is much improved by adding Randall Cobb. It's just not he's a better player than Cole Beasley. He can do more things than Cole Beasley. He can stretch the defense better than Cole Beasley. Michael Gallup, I believe, on the outside, is their speed receiver opposite Amari Cooper. I believe he will have a breakout season. And Amari Cooper, if he can get his heel, all right, he's got an issue with his heel. He missed most of training camp, most of practice. I believe he was going to build on because he missed all of last season. And him and Dak had developed a rapport during the season that I believe equates to them being more explosive and putting more fear into the defense, Nick.
And one last point on Dallas. Their starting lineup on each side of the ball, you can match up with maybe not the very best teams in football, but almost any team in football. But because they have spent, they've drafted really well and they've paid those guys, their frontline players are pretty damn expensive. They don't have a lot of depth. And so when we know there's going to be injuries throughout an NFL season, some teams like Philly are better situated to sustain some injuries.
Yes.
The Cowboys are built kind of like the Rams last year. Really, really good front line and got to be fortunate with the injury luck. The Rams were last year, by the way.
Right.
They don't. Once you get to the two deep of the three deep, they don't have a ton of depth you love.
Back here, first things first, joined by Coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Great to have you here. We got some football to finally discuss with you. Not that we didn't love all your preseason stuff.
I have forgot you were on the show, but I was quoting you earlier in the show as far as Coach Mangini. Talking about continuity.
We quote Coach a lot,
actually.
Oh,
he's the most quoted person.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no question about it.
I'm hoping I quote him enough that he's like Coach Pagano. Go from this seat to out there. I'm working on it now.
Talk some Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott, actually, we'll talk Rams. Zeke isn't the only player who got paid this week. Rams signed Jared Goff to an extension worth $134 million. That includes an NFL record $110 million guaranteed. The signing ensures that Goff and head coach Sean McVay, both now signed for the next few years, can continue to run this high-powered Rams offense together. Here's McVay on his franchise quarterback.
I think it's great for him. It's something that demonstrates a commitment that we've always felt to him.
It definitely increases your urgency a little bit when you know that type of commitment, but I don't feel like I'll change my process or anything, but I do understand the responsibility of it and all that stuff that goes with it.
It's just the start. You know, this isn't a finality. This is just the start of him continuing to grow, continuing to lead us, and what he's done over the last couple of years. It's been a blessing for me to be able to work with him.
There's a reason why I was the number one pick, and when I was going through the, you know, early on in my career, you have to go back to understanding that what you did prior to that is why you are there, and it's no different with this. You know, what I've done up to this point is why this has happened, so don't try to be something that hasn't got you there.
All right, so McVay and Goff now married with this offense for a few years to come at least. Coach, what do you make of the Rams' commitment to Jared Goff?
Well, there's a few things. The first thing is I love the fact that nobody heard about this.
Great point.
Love the fact that they were able to do this contract without it being an ongoing saga every single day where everybody had to discuss it. So to me, that's good business, and that shows that organizationally things are on the right track. In terms of what he said after he signed the contract, he's right. He doesn't have to do anything besides be who he's been. That's why they signed him to this extension. That's what they want him to be. But he opened it up with there definitely is a sense of urgency with the new contract. And that conflict there, to me, could be a little bit problematic because guys do feel this sense of, I got paid all this money. I need to be this Superman instead of being the great player that they've been and continuing to progress. I'd say the commitment makes sense based off of Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott and where the market is and the young guys are getting signed. My biggest concern is a little bit like Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz has no playoff experience, so we don't know what he's going to do there. So that's an unknown. With Jared, he does, but his playoff experience has been disappointing.
It's not been great.
Two touchdowns in four games. His completion percentage is almost down 10%. His quarterback rating is almost down 25% or 23%, whatever the numbers are. They're pretty staggering when you look at what he did in the regular season versus what he's done in the postseason. And that, to me, is a little bit like what he said at the beginning of his contract. He's adding, it feels like he's adding pressure to himself in the postseason to be something different, and that's leading to this constriction of performance instead of following the same path.
Yeah, I know Sean McVay, he expressed to a good friend of mine, Peter King. I talked to Peter last week, and he spent time with him. And as far as when he gets into the playoff, he does put more pressure on himself, but he tries to not make mistakes. And Sean McVay wants him to have the same personality in the playoffs, being more aggressive. He doesn't care if he throws. I told him, I don't care if you throw interceptions, but I want you to be more aggressive. So to me, playoff football is totally different. And there's not a lot of players that have instant playoff success, not unless they have a dominant running game or an outrageous defense. If you look at the guys who have a good playoff record, Look how they get started.
Russell Wilson, how he got started. Tom Brady, how he got started. Ben Roethlisberger, how he got started. Those guys were not the great quarterbacks they are now when they won their first Super Bowl.
And I'm very fortunate that I was able to cover the game. And you know what we said about all those quarterbacks? We were consistent. Well, can Tom Brady, can they throw the ball? Can he, oh, does he have to be on a run-oriented team with defense? Russell Wilson. Oh, it's the defense. It's Pete Carroll and them. Mm-hmm. And then Russell developed as a passer. All of these guys, we had those same question marks about. Yes, Goff wants to be better in the postseason, but they've set him up for success. They're moving into that new arena. Stan Kroenke, not only does Stan have a whole bunch of money, Stan's married to a woman that's got a bunch of money. The Rams are doing things the right way. When they moved to Los Angeles, when they hired McVay, when they hired their general manager, when they got Goff as a quarterback, when they went out and even hired Ndamukong Suh for a year, I need you to do this. Remember we had the question marks about them keeping that locker room together?
Right.
So the Rams, we got to give them credit. As far as institutional talent, they got it. They're doing everything the right way and how they've handled things. Man, Coach mentioned something. Keeping it under the radar. We in the media start thinking they're not in love with Goff.
Yep.
Actually, it was the other way. They're madly in love with him, trying to get this thing hitched from Dayton. We're going to get let's get married for a long time.
I thought they were waiting. I thought they wanted to see him do it another year because here's my only concern with Jared Goff. We know when all the pieces are in place, he's excellent. But is he a quarterback that if one of those things changes – he falls off a cliff.
One of those things is changing. Todd Gurley is not the same Todd Gurley. Well, would you consider that a little bit of a change?
Well, it's a concern, and while I'm not ready to definitively say Todd Gurley's not the same Todd Gurley, there's reason to believe he won't be. So an arthritic knee, that doesn't seem
I'm
like it's going
to
go
say
away.
It.
Okay. That it's that
all
he
right.
is
a, I haven't seen the arthritic knee get better.
Get better.
There's a reason why how old is Todd Gurley?
He's 26.
Okay, 25? 25. Is there a reason why I'm not practicing? Two practices in a row, coach? Yeah, there's a reason, because your knee can't hold up. So I don't believe that the Todd Gurley we saw the last 2 years will ever see him again. I still believe he can be a 1,000-yard rusher, though.
So, but even if we just throw out his rookie season, year one, which even by rookie quarterback standards was a disaster. If we just say, listen, it was Jeff Fisher, the offense, all that, that's fine. But even last year, where the team was great, there is pre-Cooper Cup injury and post-Cooper Cup injury, Jared Goff, and the numbers are jarring. You mentioned it, the way his rating dropped in the playoffs. He goes from 113 rating in the MVP discussion along with Mahomes and Breeze to a below-average quarterback, and that's not over a small sample size. And so the question I have for you, Coach, is because of how well the Rams, to Chris's point, have been built because of the intelligence on the coaching staff. I think the most diverse receiving core as far as Cooks, number one receiver in a deep threat. Robert Woods said himself, I think I can do everything as well as any receiver in football. Cooper Kupp, an excellent slot receiver. Todd Gurley, who up until the arthritis hit his knee or up until the knee injury, was maybe the best running back in football. How many quarterbacks could you have plugged into Jared Goff's spot and he would have had similar levels of success in that system, with that coach, with that talent? That's the major question that I have. And can he have that same level of success if you start to pare away some of that talent?
Well, and we talk about this with Dak Prescott. You're also betting that the guy continues to develop.
Yes.
He's a smart guy with high character who's in the system for the third year. You're anticipating that he's going to grow like all players, like Tom Brady grew, like a lot of great quarterbacks as they get more experience. And he's gotten some experience in the playoffs. Where I see his challenges is the Rams have been incredibly healthy. They have had tremendous health,
the last two years.
Especially on the offensive line. And they had continuity on the offensive line. Now they've got two new players on the offensive line. That's going to be a challenge. Figuring out where Gurley is, that's going to be a challenge. The post-Super Bowl hangover, that's going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. There's all these things and the pressure of a new contract. As much as you tell a guy, hey, just be who you are, there's this inherent need to justify your belief in him, and he's got to fight that. So it's going to be interesting to see where he can go and how much he does progress based off his intangibles.
And real quick, I don't believe that graphic is fair to Jared Goff, because you need to have Sean McVay's face up there, because he's supposed to be the genius.
Sure.
Okay, why don't you have a tight end involved in your offense? And if you don't have a tight end involved in your offense, if you lose your slot receiver, your passing game and your offense is going to suffer. So next time we do that, y'all need to put the genius up there because he's supposed to come up with a design for the young quarterback to perform.
All right, guys, get on that. Put McVay's face next to golf. They can be a little two-headed.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.